We're all presidents, we're all congressmen, we're all cops and waiting. We're the workers of the world. There is the elite and the dispossessed, and it's only about survival. Who has skill to play the game for all it's worth? Reaching out, scared kind of perfection. Let's try and keep as much emotion.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Lawrence Michel, who's the president of the Economic Policy Institute. He is the principal author of a research volume published every 2 years that is widely considered the authoritative text on the American workforce, The State of Working America. His latest report is titled Unions, Inequality, and Faltering Middle Class Wages. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lawrence Michel.
Well, thanks for having me, and nice to talk to you again.
And on this Labor Day, Larry Michel, obviously, you know, one tends to do a little bit of hand-wringing about how we're down to, what, 6 or 7% of the private workforce unionized. The public employees' unions are under attack. The Republican platform, for the first time ever, has come out with incredibly hostile anti-union language against collective bargaining. Any cursory look at the trajectory would indicate that the power of money is overwhelming, or the power of organized money, shall I say, is overwhelming the power of organized people, and particularly organized workers.
Well, let's set the whole context. You know, for 30 years, we've had a middle class that really has not done all that well, even though the economy was rich enough to provide a rapid growth of incomes for everybody. And then the question has to be, why has that occurred? Why has the economy worked so that the fruits of economic growth disproportionately go to the top 1% rather than to the vast majority? And the answer is that there's been a number of policies implemented on behalf of those who have the most wealth and power that steered the economy into, you know, so that the people at the top really benefit. One of the major ways that happened is to allow and to make sure that people lost the ability to get together, to do collective bargaining, to represent themselves with their employers. And that right has eroded, as when people get together to do that, it's very hard to be successful. They can be fired with impunity. And employers have the upper hand more generally for a lot of different reasons. So that's not a good thing, and I don't think most people support losing the ability to band together to represent their own best interests with their employers. This has hurt not only those people who don't have a union anymore or would otherwise have a union, but a strong collective bargaining agreements in occupations and industries in the past used to be able to set a standard that most employers abided by so that people who were not directly part of a collective bargaining agreement also were beneficiaries. And that going away is really hurt a lot of people.
But it seems, though, that not just the organized labor landscape has changed in America radically from the 30s and 40s and 50s and even 60s to the current situation. There seems to have been a change in the attitudes of American capitalists. Now, of course, with the increasing financialization of our economy, more and more of our capitalists are into extracting wealth and not creating it, and by extension, creating jobs. But there's also, I think, a lack of a sense of American social contract. And in many ways, American capitalists and corporate CEOs have used globalization as an excuse, in a sense, to say, well, I'm sorry, I can't pay you guys anything because, you know, the same work can be done in Sri Lanka for a fraction of what you guys can do it for.
Well, it is true that employers have used globalization as a tool against American workers, and that some of our politicians have really facilitated their doing that through various kinds of free trade agreements. But it can also be exaggerated, the power of globalization. There's lots of areas of the economy and hospitals and in hotels and restaurants you know, in retail and supermarkets, all sorts of places that are not in direct competition with anyone from abroad, where the same kind of thing has happened, where employers have gotten the upper hand. So it is a much larger phenomena. Globalization is sometimes sold as the reason. And what's interesting about that is the economics of globalization suggests that it makes us all better off. In fact, it can only make us all better off if the overall gains from trading are shared across the board, because economics teaches us that those people who are put in direct competition with lower-wage workers abroad are going to see their wages lowered. And it's not surprising that that's happened, and there is no effort in this country to make sure that economic growth is broadly shared.
Again, I'm speaking with Lawrence Michel, who's the president of the Economic Policy Institute. He's the principal author of a research volume published every 2 years that is widely considered the authoritative text on the American workforce, The State of Working America. His latest report is titled Unions, Inequality, and Faltering Middle Class Wages. It does seem that in spite of the efforts at the Republican convention for the considerably wealthy Mitt Romney and the fairly wealthy Vice President Paul Ryan to come across as defenders of the middle class, which in many ways they was their task, I think, to the American television audience, it seems as if the Obama campaign strategy will focus on the middle class more and more as we get closer to November. In terms of your study, Unions, Inequality, and the Faltering Middle Class and Faltering Middle Class Wages, there have been some alarming statistics that have come out recently from the Federal Reserve and then more recently from the Pew Research Center about how the middle class has been decimated in the last couple of decades, losing a couple of decades of growth and wealth. What's the sense, though, of where the middle class is in terms of its recognizing the political reasons for their demise as opposed to being sort of angry and inchoate? I know it's a vague question, but
let's go over all that ground. It is true that the income of a middle-class family is now lower than it was 10 years ago, and it's not just because of this recession, although that's been really, really hurt people broadly. It's that even in the period under George Bush and the other business cycle from 2000 to 2007, that a typical family's income actually didn't grow over that period. It lost in the recession and never really made up much ground in the recovery. And we need to get to the fundamentals. The fundamentals of this problem are that people's wages, that what they can buy with their paychecks and with the benefits that they are provided from employers, have not been growing for 10 years. And that's true for college graduates. It's true for high school graduates. And people's wages and benefits are not growing in spite of the fact that the economy and what it produces, the output of goods and services per hour worked, has grown substantially. So that is the fundamental matter, the fact that there's been a divergence between the economy being able to provide much higher pay for most workers and the fact that people aren't getting it. Now, why that's happened is what I think, is not sufficiently talked about. And in this election, you hear a lot of discussion of really important issues, how much of the rich are going to pay in taxes or not, you know, and what kind of social insurance system are we going to have? We're going to have a Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. Those are all very important, but we're not really talking about what is it that we're going to do to get people jobs, get people good jobs, to make sure that their wages and benefits are rising with productivity. And that doesn't come out in the reports you mentioned. That doesn't really come out in the discussion. I think people understand that. I fear that people believe that what's happening, there's no other choice. I don't believe that to be true. I think that the reason why people's pay doesn't keep up is that we live in an economy that people are very disempowered, where labor standards are very weak. We have young people, college graduates, working in interns for no money whatsoever. We have people at the very bottom, mostly immigrant workers, who sometimes have to fight to get paid for work they've already done, and where's City Council of Los Angeles, et cetera, moving on legislation to stop wage theft? You know, why do we have to do something like that? It's just because employers are able to ride roughshod over people. It's because we have too much unemployment. It's because there's not enough collective bargaining where people can set, you know, higher standards for themselves and for other workers in their occupation and industry.
Well, Larry Michel, at the Republican convention last week, Paul Ryan made a joke about kids, 20-year-olds, staying at home, watching the posters of Barack Obama on their walls fade because they were sort of trapped in unemployment. And, of course, it's a cheap shot when you look at the big picture of the problems facing the millennial generation coming into the workforce now. There simply aren't the jobs, and many of them have been ripped off by this incredible for-profit college racket that's going on, where they get indentured with huge student debts and end up with worthless educations from these bogus universities that spend all of the taxpayers' money, which is what they live on promoting themselves and not providing any real education for these kids. A lot of them are vets, a lot of them are minorities. So, you know, we need to be having a debate, surely, about, you know, where are the new jobs going to come from?
Well, I think that's a good question, but I think that the fact is that it's not that we're waiting for certain industries and occupations to arise. We have a problem of a recession caused by a financial crisis, caused by deregulation of the kind the Republicans supported and some Democrats supported, that basically followed laissez-faire economics. Unemployment is too high. We can do policies which, in fact, stimulate the economy to get more jobs. And we would get jobs back in all sorts of industries and occupations. The problem that young college graduates face is a real one. It also predates the current recession. Since the year 2000, if you look at the wages of college graduates in their 20s, they've been lower every year. And the wages and the benefits that are available in jobs that college graduates get, young college graduates, are far less likely to be able to get a job with employer-provided health care or employer-provided pensions. So this is a problem that predates President Obama. It is exacerbated, for sure, in the recession. I've got four kids between the ages of 22 and 32. So I can, you know, talk all about them, and many have had to stay at home in the intervening years. So, you know, this is a real problem, and it's an ongoing one, and it's only going to be fixed if, in fact, employers are competing for workers, unemployment is down, and they feel obligated to provide good pay and benefits.
Well, but the policies being profited by the Republicans, the austerity policies, we've seen what
they exacerbate this problem.
We've seen what's happened in Europe.
They're complete hypocrites. They've done nothing but try to block any attempt at providing jobs or even providing assistance to people who are out of work, blocking the ability of people to get unemployment insurance so they can help themselves and their families get through a very, very tough time. They're obviously hypocritical. The unemployment is far higher than anybody would want. It's far higher than I think was necessary. I think better policies on the part of the administration, but with a bit more help from the opposition, that we could have had a lot more policies. Listen, we have state and local governments that have been busy cutting back on employment. They're doing that because there's a recession and there's a lack of revenue. We could easily get back millions of jobs in both the public and private sector by just being able to reestablish the kinds of services that we used to be able to expect from local governments and state governments. Many, many other things could be done. We could be investing in infrastructure. We could be fixing the infrastructure of our schools. We could be doing much more on the energy independence, energy renewable fronts. We could even have government provide jobs directly to people like we did in the 1930s. I think if we did that, people would actually see the jobs that are being produced. I think the stimulus kind of policies the president pursued, I supported them. I think they were successful. But one of the things that's weak about that is that people can't trace when they themselves or a member of their family are actually benefiting from a job that's created because, you know, we have done certain things like give someone a tax cut, give aid to state and local government, or provide unemployment insurance so that people are spending. These are good things to do. I understand these as an economist. People don't observe how they actually translate into more jobs, even though they do.
Well, just in closing, Larry Michel, the economist William Lozonik, who does a lot of work on the nature of changing nature of our capitalism in terms of the financialization of our economy, which has benefited Wall Street and the CEOs, and they're in a situation that their model is to extract wealth and concentrate it at the top, not to create wealth in the way that even the robber barons did. And even Henry Ford understood you had to pay your workers enough to buy your products. And I don't know how that can be changed. One of the things that Lozonik has suggested needs to be done is that they've got to stop the ability of CEOs to buy back, these corporations to buy back their own stock, which is totally unproductive. And it just runs up the price of stock and allows the CEOs to write themselves these massive checks. And none of this money, these billions and trillions that the corporate America is sitting on, is being reinvested in plant and equipment and research and development. So it seems to me that, you know, we've been talking about what has to be done to improve the conditions for labor in this country. But a hell of a lot of it seems to be at the doorstep of this predatory and useless kind of form of capitalism that's taking over American capitalism.
Well, I do think that the financial sector is dominating the economy, and we can get at them by, in fact, levying a financial transactions tax so that everything that they basically do, a little bit of money goes to the government and helps us meet the deficit and support the spending that we need. It also would slow down all the transactions that really don't really help us. And, you know, people buying and selling things at a split second with computer programs doesn't really advance the cause of anybody but those people who are really living off of the rest of the private sector.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today on this Labor Day, Lawrence Michel.
Okay, well, thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Lawrence Michel, who's the president of the Economic Policy Institute. He's the principal author of a research volume published every 2 years that is widely considered the authoritative text on the American workforce, The State of Working America. His latest report is titled Unions, Inequality, and Faltering Middle Class Wages. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back talking with veteran labor journalist Sam Pizzagatti.
There once was a union maid. She never was afraid of the goons and the ginks and the company finks and the deputy sheriff that made the raid. She went to the union hall when a meeting it was called. When the company boys come around, she always stood her ground. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me.